Welcome to the 2019 ULI Belgium Annual Conference audio recording. Guy Perry is Senior Advisor at McKinsey & Company. ULI asks him what are the future opportunities and challenges for European cities with the focus on some of the geopolitical issues: migration and density, inclusion, populism, multilateralism, and protectionism.
I'm going to take a little bit of a different angle on how we should measure our cities. A lot of what we do at McKinsey has to do with measurement, usually regarding profitability. But there are different ways of triggering profitability, and there, of course, are different ways of interpreting how we should shape our environment for ourselves, actually. And I'll be selfish in that respect, because we are in a period where our species is at risk. So how we develop, especially the larger scale projects, how we extend our cities, has enormous impact on the environment and on ourselves. I actually started off my career, when I was working on the SWIFT, I was working on the Olympics in Barcelona as well, in the same office, part of that Olympic development. And what I didn't realize at the time is that we were not just preparing the Olympics, we were actually preparing Barcelona for the future. And we were preparing Barcelona for the future in more ways than I realized at the time. And now some of the analysis that I do actually focuses on various metrics, those metrics that I think affect us in some ways the most directly. This figure is the average life expectancy of the city of Barcelona. This is the average healthy life expectancy. So actually you're looking for a delta that is as small as possible between these two. This, of course, is high as possible, but a delta that is as small as possible. The CO2 in tons per capita, PM2.5 as an average. This is the number of fatalities per 100,000 in that environment. This is the obesity rate. This is the overweight rate of the citizens in that location. This is the walk score. Now, of course, all of Barcelona doesn't have that walk score, but much of it does. It is in many ways the gold standard. And I've added something recently, which I'm starting to track now, which is online time. How much time do people spend online? I think up till the present, everyone thinks the more the better, but I'll talk about how that may actually be an issue for our society as we go forward. So 5 hours. So just keep some of these figures in mind. I'll show just a few other cities. This is Tokyo. Tokyo actually even lived longer than in Barcelona. And as a country, Japan, as a large country, Japan is the country where people live the longest. Interestingly enough, Tokyo is more or less an enormous village of 38 million people. So it doesn't follow many of the rules that you'll be seeing in the cities that I'll be showing in a moment. CO2 is a bit higher than Barcelona for an industrial city. That's not surprising. PM2.5 is actually a bit lower. Accident rate is very, very low. And if you know Tokyo, you really don't use a car unless you really have to. Obesity rate's at 5%, and the overweight rate is at 24%. That's actually going up a bit. Walk score is very high in areas like where I'm showing here, which is Shibuya. Interesting. Online time is even lower than in Barcelona. They're at 4 hours. Actually, some of the ratings I see are at as little as 3.5 hours. So let's look at some of, say, other cities, more Western cities, and some of the more recent cities in a moment. This is Dallas, so we have a lower life expectancy. Actually, the life expectancy in the U.S. has plateaued about 5 years ago. It's declining now. CO2 is much heavier. PM2.5 is relatively light. That's one of the advantages of sprawl to the extent that Dallas has it. Obviously, mortality rate's a bit higher on the roads. These are some interesting figures. 36% of the population is obese, and 69% is overweight. Walk score is quite mediocre, even quite low in most of the metropolitan area of Dallas, and you'll notice the online time is a bit higher. Let's just go quickly now. Dubai. Dubai is often seen as a city of the future. The best consultants in the world have been working on it for a couple decades now. And what has it yielded? By the way, any figure that is in red is significantly below a global average. All right? So life expectancy is pretty good, but the healthy life expectancy is actually quite low. CO2 is very high. PM2.5 is very high. I have to add, some of that is for natural reasons because they are in the desert. But the way they build and the way they drive is not helping that. Mortality rate on the roads are among the highest, even though they have some of the most advanced roads in the world. Obesity rate's very high, walk scores quite poor. Even just as you step out of downtown, downtown's actually quite walkable, but beyond that, it's very difficult. This is what's interesting. Online time is actually 8 hours. What I'm finding is over and over, there's a correlation between this and this. Well, Dubai is not the worst. Kuwait is even worse. I'm not going to go into all the details. I think if you visited Kuwait, you'll understand where I'm going with this. So let me just quickly get into one of the key measures is how actively do we use our cities? Do our cities actually function as natural gyms? In other words, are they a habitat that are fit for ourselves? And one of the things I always look at is I look at metabolic equivalent of task. I've looked at this even for reinsurance companies like AON. When they need an explanation as to why these well-educated, well-paid people working in new office buildings, driving new cars, living in new neighborhoods, have very high NCD rates, NCD rates being lifestyle diseases. And so I do an analysis. I look through what is a typical day in their life. And actually, it turns out it's almost impossible for these people, say, living in Manila, to actually be healthy. It's virtually impossible. So what do we look at? Some of the two key culprits in terms of our decline in well-being is the time that we spend in front of screens and the times that we spend driving. So we look at Dallas for a moment. This is actually where, the show Dallas was shown. This is where JR's ranch was, South Forks Ranch. And this is typically how people live out there. Now, I show this because it's a model that's being propagated all over the world and has been for the last few decades. It's actually pretty much impossible if you look at these key triggers, and this comes largely from actually ULI research. If you look at these elements and you find that this kind of environment truly fails human beings in the most basic way. And I always verify my research, so these are different school districts. Those of you who know Dallas, Highland Park's a mixed-use area built in the 1920s and 30s, and the Princeton School District is where South Forks Ranch is. Now, percent BMI at high risk of the students, that's a polite way of saying 32% of the students are obese in that school district. That usually only gets worse, not better. Now, the interesting thing is that also translates into greenhouse gas emissions. Those environments where people are less healthy are actually also higher carbon environments. So what I'm finding more and more is there's a clear correlation to environments that are being built that don't actually shape us in the right way to actually environments that are also degrading our ecosystem and our habitat at the global scale. If you will, this is lazy urbanism. We can call it a fat city. And this is tight urbanism. This is the Back Bay of Boston. Now, we can look at cities in terms of how healthy or how healthy they'll make you or how they will actually impede your quest for health. And we see this more and more. I'm not going to dwell on that too much. But it's not just in the U.S. It's in China. As of about 4 years ago, China crossed the threshold of over half of its population being overweight. That's pretty amazing. If anyone had been back in China in the 80s, you would think that could never happen. But it's happened. And what has happened, this is the city of Shantou, small city of about 5 million people, the older part of Shantou and the way in which people lived, the newer parts of Shantou and the way they're living today, also makes it very challenging just to be a human being and function in an ecosystem that works for you. And the city of Sydney, the same thing, dramatically different health statistics from different parts of the city. Some areas we have, if we just take the measure of obesity, less than 14% in some of the eastern areas, and we have over 30%, even 39% in the western suburbs. If you drill down into those streets, which I have, you see clearly it's very hard to inhabit those places in the western suburbs as a human being. Now, I'll just do a case study, and I'll use this case study because it was something that was somewhat tied to ULI. It received the Global Award a few years ago. This is the city of Warsaw, so one of the fastest expanding cities in Europe today. This is an area that is more or less business-as-usual development, and this will be the subject area that we'll look at a little more closely. This is development between 2002 and 2011. Both of them went from rural sites to be urbanized, business as usual, piecemeal development, so very much what we saw in the Dallas scenario, and then something that was much more compact and frankly also much more profitable, because we wouldn't have gotten away with it had it not also been profitable. And we do the same kind of measurements in terms of how do these environments work for people, and how do they work for people at different stages in their lives. So if we look more closely at the project that was developed from around 2000, it's still ongoing. Actually, it's even expanded beyond this. I guess it's the largest project in Europe this century so far. It's about 7 million square meters now built. It is a completely mixed-use environment. Now, this is showing a part that is more related to housing. But below that housing, there are shops and restaurants. And just around the corner and across the street, we'll see some other overviews. There are all kinds of activities integrated, whether it's the largest religious structure in Europe of the last 200 years, technology parks, hospitals, schools. It's a fully integrated community. One of the things that actually, I think, made this project succeed in retrospect is that the client or the owner of the land knew nothing about real estate. And we functioned purely on common sense principles from the outset. And so there were a lot of tensions, for example, with the road department. One of the biggest quests I had was how do we actually reduce how much road we're actually going to put into this neighborhood? Part of that was to drive profitability, but the other part was how do we actually drive walkability? Because typically these new suburbs tend to be, I would say, over-dimensioned. There are the reasons like the fire trucks and all this kind of thing. But frankly, I'd rather the fire truck adapt to us rather than the other way around. So some of the government buildings, schools, hospitals, technology park, all of this is within walking distance. The residential units, and by the way, this is all done by Polish architects, except for the German school, was done by a German architect. But all of these buildings are done by different architects, some of them very established architects, some young architects who have just started up with their firms. If I would work with them, I would often set them up with a very experienced contractor who would help kind of smooth some of the wrinkles of some of their first buildings. But the diversity of the urban landscape was very important. And then the green space, including the green space on the roof. 50% of the roof was actually given over to terraces, which would, in a sense, green naturally in the sense that people would actually use those terraces for themselves. So this is just a typical terrace that we see on the left. But otherwise, the density of the area was actually about three times the average density of Warsaw. And then just the kind of activities and animation that we had. The shared bicycle station is among the busiest in Warsaw, which is actually quite unusual for new districts. It's not so difficult to establish those in the older parts of cities, but when you're creating a new district to actually have that work. And you can cycle to the center of Warsaw. It's about 10 kilometers. There's a cycle path all the way in. And I just want to mention, if we look at some of the details, this is not the way the city maintains its landscape in Warsaw typically, outside of a few touristic areas. This landscape was done by the residents themselves. One of the things that I did while I was there, or at least there often, was to organize events where hundreds of residents would actually come out to shape their own environment, to fix their own environment, to actually make it to a standard which they would be proud of. I think it's one of the reasons why we have almost no crime in this area, even though it's not gated. And this is them actually doing that. When the city didn't have money to implement some of the public spaces, we implemented them ourselves. I had done the design with a Polish team, and we went out and implemented it. We just did it. And people were absolutely overjoyed to do this. We did this 10 times. And we would do about a kilometer of street at a time. Or in this case, you can see perhaps this whole promenade was done in one day by the residents. Many of the trees are named after children because we donate that way the trees. We'd actually self-fund our project. Now, some of these two things that happened, this came out in an article in Newsweek. I didn't even realize it. But there was an interesting statistic that came about, was that we had statistically the highest birth rate in the country. We had the highest birth rate in the country with the women with the highest level of education in the country. Now, if you know demographics, That doesn't go together normally. It's usually an inverse correlation. But if you're a developing country, what do you want? I think you want your well-educated mothers to actually have lots of kids. And that's actually what's happening here. But why were we able to do that is because it was so convenient for the parents to raise the children. The kids could walk to school, they could walk to the shops, they could walk to entertainment, sports facilities, etc. So you're not having this kind of torture of modern life where you're driving around all the time and often compromising the career of one of the parents. So we tightened everything up in the community, and as I said, I didn't even realize it. It was Newsweek that wrote about it. Now, some of the other statistics that I hold dear, and this is what I hold dear on the projects that I work for with McKinsey on throughout the world today. So it's not just about profitability, it's how do you get to profitability. So one of the things that that's very important to me is, what is the life expectancy of an area? How do we actually outperform a metropolitan area in terms of life expectancy? We can do that now. There are ways of doing it. In this case, in Vilanov, the life expectancy is now almost 92 years in a city that's in the high 70s. The obesity rate for children is a fraction of what it is for the rest of the city and the country, in part because there's no apartment with a playground farther than 80 meters from it. Everyone has access to a playground, which is often one of the challenges for kids. I even remember, I have an apartment there, my son, 6 years old. Of course, they're all addicted to iPads these days, but the only thing that could trump an iPad was when he heard his friend Cuba. I don't particularly like Cuba, but I like Cuba more than I like an iPad. He heard Cuba, and he goes down and he plays with Cuba. Hopefully, you don't do anything too terrible. But in any case, the human scale of the area, the proximity of all these playgrounds actually creates an environment which is much more conducive to an active, naturally active lifestyle. I mentioned the birth rate. We have the lowest crime rate in the city, even though it's not gated. One of the developers had the genius idea to gate their site within it. We have about 20 different developers involved. They were sued by their own residents because people said, we're living in this neighborhood because we don't want to live behind gates. That was very interesting and very contrary to the way the market was working when we initiated this project back in 2000. We also had, interestingly enough, the highest voter turnout ever in Polish elections, and we continue to hold that record in the country. And that, to me, is a very important dimension of civicism. In other words, how do you actually get people to believe that they can impact their environment? So we have that highest turnout. Now, some of the discussions I heard earlier were focused on how do you integrate different classes. Now, this neighborhood began as an affordable neighborhood. It's now become the richest place in the country. But that doesn't mean that everyone there has a high income. In one building, any of these buildings, for example, that one, the range of apartment sizes go from almost 300 square meters with over 150 square meters of terrace to 30 square meters without a terrace. So you'll have an old rusty Toyota sitting next to a brand new modified Bentley because a normal Bentley is not good enough. And these people coexist absolutely fine. In fact, usually the smartest kid in the playground is the one in that little apartment with that very modest vehicle. And I want to add one thing about vehicles. For Poland, it's probably the country that's most passionate about cars in Europe. Why? Because they didn't have them for so long. You had to wait 10 years for a horrible vehicle. So we have quite a bit of parking here, 1.5 per unit, which is, I think, high by today's standards. But you'll notice you hardly see any parking. We have virtually all of the parking under the buildings. Not easy to achieve in a floodplain because we're in the floodplain of the Wisła River here. But it was essential to maintain a human metric to the district. Once you start worrying about having surface car parking and skimping on actually doing parking correctly, you're on a very slippery slope in terms of creating a high-quality built environment for people. So I guess I'll wrap up here. But if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer. And I was also very intrigued with the presentations just prior to mine. I wasn't able to see quite all of them, but the discussion, I would have loved to have participated as well, some of those questions. So please feel free. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed the ULI Belgium audio recording. If you want to know more about the activities of ULI Belgium, please go to belgium.uli.org.